Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, March 12th, 2018. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Thanks for tuning in. On today's show, we'll talk with 360 North's David Purdy about a public screening of Inside Out, Leaving Prison Behind, and a panel discussion about the challenges of reentry for people who have been incarcerated. Joanne Flora will highlight Reach's 40th anniversary. Rasha McChesney will preview the KTOO Folk Fest photo show. And we'll learn about the high school walkout with guests Theo Hoke, Kathy Tran, and Peter Sidmore. Those interviews, national native news, bird note, music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently 37 degrees, overcast and melty here in the capital city.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribes as sovereign governments have the authority to collect taxes on their reservations. Eight tribes within South Dakota's boundaries, along with the National Congress of American Indians, are taking steps to make sure that authority remains in place. In April, South Dakota goes before the U.S. Supreme Court to argue that out-of-state and online vendors should collect and remit taxes from South Dakota customers. Tribes have filed a friend of the court brief to make sure the opinion does not disturb their current taxing authority. Victoria Wicks reports.
Derek Bietzo is an attorney representing the National Congress of American Indians. He says the tribes did not file their amicus brief to support one side or the other. Tribes want to make sure the opinion does not inadvertently allow the state to tax reservation residents or take away tribes' authority to impose sales taxes on their own members.
We know that the Supreme Court, when they're looking at an issue, sometimes they look at that issue very narrowly. We want to make sure that there's not unintended consequences that affect tribes' inherent regulatory authority to tax.
He says current tax law has been hammered out over generations of congressional action and Supreme Court decisions. And he says as the online marketplace grows, Congress continues to consider legislation to accommodate states' needs while protecting tribes' interests.
The Marketplace Fairness Act is a bill that's been pending before Congress for several different sessions, and we've had support within that bill, which specifically recognizes tribal tax and jurisdiction in the current version.
Bietzo says online shopping is important to reservation residents who might otherwise have to drive long distances to find products in stores. And he says tribal governments need tax revenues to offer services to their constituents. His contentions are echoed in the amicus brief, which notes that self-determinism and economic self-sufficiency in Indian country rely on income from tribal taxes and immunity from state and local taxes. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Last month, the House of Representatives passed a bill to give tribal authorities access to the Amber Alert system for locating missing children. Though the legislation has wide bipartisan support, lawmakers are having a tough time getting it onto the floor for a vote. Matt Laszlo has more from Washington.
In May of 2016, Ashlyn Mike was waiting for the bus with her brother when she was abducted. She never made it home. By the time authorities found her in a remote part of the Navajo Nation, she had been brutalized and left to die in the desert. It took authorities 10 hours to issue an Amber Alert for Ashlyn because tribal law enforcement doesn't have access to the system. Congress is working to change that. Maryland Democrat Jamie Raskin helped usher the bill through the House.
It was totally bipartisan on the House side, and it goes right to the question of public safety on the reservation.
Now the bill's moved to the Senate. The ranking member of the Indian Affairs Committee, Senator Tom Udall, thinks the bill is paramount to the safety of Indian country. But he says tribal leaders need to prioritize infrastructure upgrades for it to be fully effective.
There are, very specific things they need to do to get it set up, to put the infrastructure in place, and they may need some help from us because these are areas that don't have very good broadband and don't have very good internet. So we need to find a way to make sure that any Amber Alert, an actual alert, gets out as widely as possible. That's the key to the system working.
The bill does allocate some funding to help connect reservations to Amber Alerts, but Udall says that's not enough.
We need a lot more resources behind this.
The White House released its top priorities for infrastructure last month, but nowhere did it mention any plans specifically for Indian country. And no vote has been scheduled on the Amber Alert bill in the Senate yet. I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Kewaunee Broadcast Corporation announces the Alaska Native Art Auction, April 4th in Anchorage, Alaska. See amazing artwork from across the Alaska Native community. Reserve a table or donate art at knba.org. Proceeds benefit Native News programming.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM, Kewaunee Broadcast Corporation. With your support, you can help us make a difference in our community.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 12th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host today. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. Joining me here in Studio A now is David Purdy. He's the digital director over at 360 North here in the building. And he and I co-produced a documentary called Inside Out, Leaving Prison Behind. We have a screening of that coming up on Wednesday and a panel discussion about the challenges of reentry. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott.
It is nice to have you here. So I'm thinking back, Inside Out, Leaving Prison Behind. It's about a, 25-minute documentary. How did this come about?
Well, we're working on a project called the Flying University. That's about a program for inmates out at UAS. That actually came out of a news story, I think, that we're working on. It turned into a half-hour documentary over the process of working on it. And there were just so many amazing stories that we heard making that documentary that we weren't able to include in it that we decided we had to make another one. And so we came up with this idea for Inside Out to kind of explore really that moment when people leave prison and what that's like to have to rebuild your life and get everything back together after being incarcerated.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when we were working on the Flying University, we kept hearing this term recidivation and to recidivate and what's it mean to re-enter society and how hard that can be. And as we all know, the recidivation rate is very high in our country these days, and we wanted to see why that is. So we were able to follow three individuals, Michelle, Stephen, and Sean, from the moment they got out of Lemon Creek Correctional Center.
Yeah, and recidivism is kind of this technical-sounding word, and we talked to a lot of experts who have a very academic understanding of this. But I think what we really wanted to do with this project was see what it's actually like. And so we actually literally walked through the gates at Lemon Creek with these three individuals when they walked out and walked down the street with them and really got that firsthand perspective of what it's like.
So I have a selection from the documentary pulled up right now I'd like to share with our listeners. So this is Stephen, who we started from him getting out of prison. Unfortunately, he had to go back to prison. And this is his second time getting out. Is that right?
Second time when we were filming him, yeah.
Okay, so let's meet him and as he's walking out of Lemon Creek.
Threw me in jail for my first technical violation for failing a UA. I sat in there for 9 days for that and am now back out. Back at square one. Try to stay away from the drugs and all the crap and get a job. I mean, I guess it's just the point is to get sick and tired of doing that so you stop doing what you're doing, but I don't think it really works that way. I don't think the answer for somebody who has that condition is to lock them in a little cell and treat them like a piece of meat or an animal and then expect them to get out the other side of an already bad situation any better off than they went in. All you've done is take somebody who's sick and create, you know, somebody who's sick and pissed off, and I don't see that helping anybody. If in the beginning you guys offered some help when I was all strung out and would have given anything to get some help and it wasn't offered, you know, I want you to sit in a cell and get pissed off and hate the system first so that the last thing in the world you want is help from that system. It's just kind of backwards, I guess. I think people are coming around to that idea that, you know, we need to offer treatment instead of incarceration.
So, yeah, Stephen Hazeltine, one of the three people that we followed coming out of Lemon Creek.
Yeah, and I think his frustration there is one of the things we're able to really capture by walking, literally walking down the road with people, is some of that, some of those in-the-moment thoughts about what's hard about the system and what's hard about this process. And I think we're also fortunate enough to capture some of the things that work really well and some of the things that inspire people when they're getting out and are helpful.
Okay, so we're going to have our first public screening of Inside Out, Leaving Prison Behind, this documentary at 5:30 downstairs at 360 here in the KTOO building this Wednesday. Admission is free. Doors open at 5. You don't need tickets. Just come on down. So we're going to watch the documentary for a little less than a half hour from 5:30 to 6. And then, David, what can we expect at 6?
Then we have a panel discussion with four people who are involved in recovery and reentry, with somebody from DOC, a couple of people that have been through the process in varying ways of being in and out of prison for a while, and somebody who's involved in recovery. And our hope is to get sort of an overview of what does work and what doesn't, having seen the in-the-moment experience of what it's like in the documentary, to talk to some people that really know the process and know the system and understand why things are the way they are and what resources are available in our community and what things they're working on to improve the situation.
Okay, and so you're going to be hosting, right? And we have Morgan Jaco of DOC, Brandon Johnson, a reentry advocate, Kara Nelson, who leads up the Haven House, and Michelle Federico, who works over at Gastineau Human Services. The five of you, they're on stage from 6 to 7. That will be recorded for TV as a forum at 360 and available on demand just after that, and then broadcast statewide on 360 North. And we're also going to do our best to catch up with Michelle, Stephen, and Sean and see where they are now, which is essentially a year after recording.
Just about, yeah.
Yeah. All right, David Purdy. Well, I'm looking forward to Wednesday night. Anything else that you would like to add?
I don't think so. I think it's going to be a very insightful discussion. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, folks. Hope to see you again. That's this Wednesday night. Doors open at 5 o'clock here at 360 in the KTOO building. The screening of Inside Out, Leaving Prison Behind starts at 5:30, and then the televised panel discussion starts at 6. If you happen to want to watch the documentary right now, you can, anytime on demand at 360north.org, and just search for Inside Out. David, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Scott.
A prisoner cries in the dark of his cell. He knows the price of living in hell. A nobody sees, nobody hears. But nothing. Me.
pick up where you left off. Complete your bachelor's degree with the Finnish College Alaska Initiative. Designed with the flexibility of online learning, it's college that fits around life and work while earning a degree in business, education, liberal arts, social science, and more. The University of Alaska Southeast is now offering a 3-credit tuition waiver for eligible applicants. Apply now for the fall semester. Learn more at finnishcollege.alaska.edu.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 12th. It's about 17 minutes past the hour. In the studio now is Joanne Flora. She is the Fund Development Director over at REACH, and we're going to be talking about the 40th anniversary wing ding, official term, the wing ding.
Officially, it's our 40th anniversary celebration.
Uh-huh.
But what is a celebration except a really cool wing ding, right? Party on with REACH.
I think a lot of us probably know what REACH is, but in case we don't.
Allow me. REACH is an organization that serves developmentally and intellectually disabled individuals and children with delays. We've been at this for about 40 years now, and it started as a handful of parents in a basement of a church just trying to have some activities for their kids that had disabilities, and today we serve approximately 400 individuals in 7 communities, Juno being the largest, and employ about 300 people.
So that basement, hanging out in the basement playing games, was somewhere around 78?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, long time, right?
Where might we see REACH in the community right now?
Interestingly enough, you will probably see us in a great many places. If you are a federal employee and you're in the federal building, you might see our custodial people. We have REACH Custodial, which is one of the enterprises that we developed in order to provide people who have some limited skills but are not entirely limited the opportunity to be employed. If you are also in the federal building, you might find us in the 9th Street Cafe, where we have a food service operation. Where else would you see us? You might see us at Costco doing demonstrations at the end of the aisles, you know, for the food. So we have some folks who do that. You would see us at the Canvas if you go to see one of the First Friday shows or another gallery show. And if you call us up, if you call REACH Shredding and you want us to come pick up your year's worth of shredding, you would see us there too.
And you're a nonprofit, right?
We are. We're a 501c3. Yes, we are.
And you already said this, I think, but remind us how many employees you have and how many clients you have.
About 400 people are being served by REACH currently with about 300 employees. And I say about because it can change and fluctuate without a whole lot of notice. You know, one thing to keep in mind is that because we serve people with developmental disability, they don't recover. And we will often have people that we will serve throughout their entire lives. And occasionally somebody will pass away, they will move. So people will come and go that way. Same thing with the employees. You know, we may have some people who are part-time, and then maybe they take another full-time job or they leave this area and go to work someplace else. So, you know, we're always kind of fluctuating a little bit, but 300 and 400 are pretty good average numbers for us.
And where does most of your funding come from?
Oh, now don't get me started. Medicaid. The greatest majority of the people served by REACH are Medicaid dependent. So that's kind of a touchy subject right now for anybody in the social services field that's delivering a health care service. Medicaid, health insurance, state and federal grants that relate to health and human services. So we have a lot of dependency, as do the people we serve have a lot of dependency, on these programs that are designed to help people who are not going to go out and get a full-time job and join the workforce and really rely on others of us to be of service and assistance throughout their day, if not their life.
Okay. Thinking of the 40th anniversary Wing Ding on Saturday, the 14th.
I might have to change that name officially now.
Elizabeth,
you know, reprint everything.
Is this considered a fundraiser? Is it a celebration? How would you describe it?
Well, it's actually both. We're going to have some of our individuals in our program who will actually come and talk about their experiences as people who are served by REACH. We will hope to raise some money. So there will be tickets to the dinner, and we'll have a raffle as an additional fundraiser. But, you know, right now we have to be really aware that in the current climate we can't rely and depend upon the traditional sources of how everything has been maintained. So we have to, you know, take it upon ourselves to be proactive. So I'm hoping people will come and help us celebrate, because we're really proud of this milestone, and we'd like to be able to say we're going to be around another 40 years continuing to provide the same quality and array of services that we provide.
Okay, so this will be on Saturday the 14th. Will you give us all the details, please?
Saturday the 14th, 7 to 10 p.m. at Elizabeth Paratovich Hall.
Mrs. April, we should point out, right?
Yes,
it's
April.
About
yes,
a
not
month,
the 14th of March.
A month and 2 days from now, give or take.
I know. seating will be limited. We have seating for 200 people, and tickets will be $50 a piece, or you can get a table of 10 for $4.50, which is good. At the same time, we're preparing for the dinner. We're also running our raffle, and those tickets are $10 each or 6 for 50. So, you know, for anybody who wants to bump it up just a little bit, both for the dinner and the raffle, you know, we're happy to throw in a little bit of an incentive. We've got some great prizes. We're going to give away some airline tickets. We've got some visitor industry opportunities if you want to do some canoeing or do a little whale watching, that type of thing. We'll have a silent auction. It's going to be fun, and our dinner is being sanctioned by the Alaska State Legislature, so we're very pleased and very proud to be able to tell people that.
Okay, if people want more information on the April 14th dinner or an anniversary Wing Ding, where should they go?
They can call me at 796-7202. If you didn't have time to catch that number, you can just call the main office at REACH. It's, you know, online in the phone book if you still have a phone book. You can also go to the canvasarts.org website, canvasarts.org, and there's a little shop on the right-hand side, and you can click that and get tickets for events and other things. So you can actually shop.
And Canvas, remind us of its relationship to REACH.
We own it. The canvas is us. It is the Canvas Art Studio and Gallery at REACH. And that was one of the other enterprises that was started about 10 years ago in order to provide an educational and artistic opportunity for the folks that we serve to express themselves, to interact with other members of the community. So if you come and take a class, you may see that you are with people who are served by REACH and also your next door neighbor. So it's a nice opportunity, and because we're a gallery as well, we are involved in the visitor community.
Okay. So again,
we get around, Scott.
This is the 40th anniversary REACH Wing Ding anniversary at the Elizabeth Paratovich Hall on April 14th from 7 to 10 p.m. and seating for 200. Your phone number is
796-7202.
7202.
Mm-hmm.
796-7202.
And all these tickets can be had online at canvasarts.org.
All right, Joanne Fora, Fund Development Director at REACH. Thanks for coming on the show. Is there anything else you want to add?
Just thank you very much. Appreciate it. And we're looking forward to celebrating our 40th anniversary.
All right, thanks.
Support for this station comes from listeners like you and from Copa, a handcrafted ice cream lunch and coffee shop serving fresh roasted organic Sentinel coffee. Ice cream flavors and online ordering at coppa.biz.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 12th. Scott Burton, your host. We're right at the bottom of the hour. Joining me in the studio now is Rasha McChesney. She is an energy policy reporter for Alaska's Energy Desk and a professional photographer. And every once in a while, the arts department, we get to steal her for something like this, the KTOO Folk Fest photo show. Rasha, welcome to the show.
Well, good afternoon, Scott. I have to say I'm happy to be poached on occasion. Not a lot of opportunities for photo and radio. This is one of them.
Okay, so let's see. We did a staff photo show back in December.
We did. And it's kind of in the same format as what we're hoping this one is going to be, which is that there are no framed photos allowed. We're calling it sort of our low-tech, low-fi show. And if you made it over here in December, what you saw was a pretty cool collection of prints hanging all throughout the building, which I thought was a really neat effect. For those of you who have ever done any darkroom work, you'll probably have some kind of deja vu or flashback to hanging all of your prints up and being able to look at them before you print that final copy and put it in a frame.
Yeah, and so we're asking you, the public, listeners of Juno Afternoon and beyond, to submit three Folkfest-related images.
We know that you're taking them. We know that you have them on your phone. We know that you're sharing them on your Snapchat, on your Facebook, on your Twitter. Now you should hang them up here so everyone can see them.
Pictures of your favorite musician.
Pictures of that banjo you were hoping that no one ever saw you play in someone else's kitchen. Picture someone sent you of you playing that banjo. We are wide open.
Picture at Centennial Hall. Picture downtown. we already got one.
We did. Actually, I'm really excited about this photo. Wes Atkins, if you're out there, thank you so much. He sent us this wonderful night view of downtown from across the Douglas Bridge, and you can see downtown in the distance, and there's these great leading lines of this bridge pointing towards downtown, and right there front and center in the frame is one boot, woman's boot, lost. Some Cinderella out there, if you see her heeled boot hanging in the hallways of KTOO, we know who took the photo. Maybe he can tell you what he did with it afterwards.
So just Folkfest related, that picture was taken during Folkfest.
She's headed to the rendezvous. and those are the photos that we want to see. I mean, of course, we all want to see your photos of the main stage, too, and your friends performing. But Folkfest is one of those things that we know is happening all over town, all hours of the day, people's kitchens, out in the streets. And we want to know what you normally see. What are your favorite memories?
And it's as easy as attaching that photo or those three photos to an email. We'll give you it now, and we'll give you it again in a minute. arts@ktoo.org.
Sorry. And to be clear, these do not have to be super high resolution photos that you took on your fancy $3,000 camera. We're going to print them in 8.5 by 11, but send your smartphone images to arts@ktoo.org.
Or even from Facebook, maybe they're
up
there.
We could take your Facebook photos. If you are, well, just one note, if you're really picky about how your photos are presented, this may not be the show for you because we are printing them in-house.
Yep, this is a community show. And so the deadline for submissions is the end of this month, March 30th, so whatever that is, 18, 19 days from now, mm-hmm. to submit them. And then we're going to hang them that week, and we will have a first Friday show opening here at the KTOO building on April 6th. And then the photos will stay up all through Folkfest, which is the next week, and for the month of April.
Yep, and we're limiting, like Scott said, we're limiting your submissions to three. Please feel free to send us more if you want to. We're not going to be able to print all of them, but we're going to do our best to get three up by every person who sends them. And please provide your name as you want us to print it, and each of the photo titles, if they don't speak for themselves. Come up with something that'll help us speak for them. And in addition to the public show, what we print here, let us know if we can use your images on our website and on our social media. We'd love to put some galleries together and show off what you guys are showing off to us.
Okay, and if you missed or want a recap of all this information, just go to ktoo.org, go down to our calendar and click on the KTOO photo show. We're calling it Folk Life.
Oh, that's so good. Public photo show.
Folk Life.
It's a hashtag, Folk Life.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Yeah. I think it's a couple of festivals around the country, but...
Well, but it's ours now.
Okay, and since we have you, again, all photos are welcome, professional, non-professional, but since we have a professional photographer here in the studio, Rasha, when you're thinking about taking pictures of musicians or things related to Folkfest, what do you think about?
I think it was Henri Cartier-Bresson, who's like my favorite French photographer. He's everybody's favorite French photographer. You guys, I just name dropped real hard. He says, if it's not good enough, you're not close enough. And I've always taken that to heart. Get as close as you possibly can. Be that obnoxious person 3 inches from someone's face. And then if you're going to send them to us from your cell phone, don't crop them or tone them beforehand. Send us the full-sized image. I need every little pixel I can get in there so that we can hang them up in 8.5 by 11. Yep.
All right. March 30th deadline. More information at ktoo.org. The Folk Life public photo show here at KTOO Public Media. Rasha McChesney, thanks for coming on the show today. Anything else we should remind folks of?
No, I am really looking forward to seeing all of your photos, all of them.
And then the community show for the month of April will be great walking around the halls up here.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
A picture of you, it ever haunts me. It makes me feel so lost and low. Where you go and how to find you. Forlorn, these things I do not know. The sickness now is falling on me. I know it's from the siren song, but fate's long fingers there to find me and cast my lot a lover's palm. Why did it have to be a little picture? Why can't the real face come around? 4 years go by and dreams just die and the world keeps turning round. And the world keeps turning round, round. Picture brought so many heartaches. Is it really worth a thousand words? Call to me on nights of longing, but lonesome, the only voice I heard. A picture of you, it ever haunts me. It may lost and low. Where you go and how to find you. Forlorn, these things I do not know. Why did it have to be a little picture? Why can't the real face come around? 4 years go by and dreams just die. Keeps turning round, and the world keeps turning round and round. 4 years go by and dreams just die, and the world keeps turning round, and the world keeps turning round and round.
Joyce's Bird Note. The next time a flock of robins gathers to pluck berries from that shrub in your backyard, expect a lot of fluttering. You'll see the birds make short hovering moves and quick aerial snatches to grab at berries. But wouldn't it be easier to just perch on a twig to pluck the fruit? Why expend so much energy? A couple of things are going on. The berries may hang from slim stems that won't support the bird's weight. So when a robin tries to land for the snatch, it falls right off the stem. Then the birds face another challenge. Their long legs get in the way. American robins have evolved rather long, strong legs for a songbird, because they spend a fair part of their time on the ground. But those long legs make it harder to creep along stems to get to those delicious berries. Imagine yourself standing on stilts, then trying to bend over to tie your shoes. But all fluttering aside, that flock of robins can clear your yard of berries in a surprisingly short time. Be ready for them next year by planting native shrubs and trees that provide food and cover. Today's show brought to you by Forterra, saving the places that are keystones of a sustainable future in the Pacific Northwest. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, March 12th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 18 minutes until the top of the hour. I have a crew of high school students in from Juno Douglas High School and Thunder Mountain High School. We're going to be talking about National Student Walkout on Wednesday. Theo Hauck, Stella Tallman, Peter Sidmore, Michaela Goodman, and Kathy Tran, welcome to a Juno afternoon. It's great to have you all here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
Yeah. Theo, why don't we start with you on stereo right over here. Tell us how you got involved with this.
Great, yeah. So when I saw the news about the Parkland shooting, exactly a month from Wednesday, I was devastated and shocked, but also kind of numb, unfortunately, because of the abundance of school shootings that have happened recently, I didn't put that much thought into it. But when we began to see students from that school start to really rally and get people involved and try to make a change, I realized that this time it could be different and that we as students were going to be part of what made that difference. And so I reached out to people at my school, and I reached out to a friend who I knew was coordinating marches across the country and walkouts across the country, and began to coordinate JDHS's walkout and got student council involved and that kind of thing.
Okay, so the walkout's going to be this Wednesday, and we'll give our listeners all the details on that here towards the end of the interview. Stella, same question to you.
All right. So my name's Stella Tallman. I'm a swimmer and a sophomore student council member at JD. And when I saw this news about the Florida shooting, I was devastated. And I'm really inspired by the kids from Stoneman Douglas High School that are speaking up against gun violence in the U.S. And I think that kids all over the nation should join them to be a part of speaking out. So I joined the walkout committee on our student council and having a good time helping organize this and promoting this.
And you pointed out to me before the show that this is not anti-gun so much as it is anti-violence.
That's correct. Yeah, we're not talking about Democrats and Republicans here. We're just talking about why we need safer schools and why gun violence is not the answer in our country.
Okay, Peter, how did you get involved?
I got involved pretty much the same way the other two did. I heard about it, and it was devastating, but I felt pretty complacent from just how the sheer number of shootings that there have been. And so I talked to the advisor for student council and said, what can I do? And she said, well, I've had about five other people ask me that. And so she kind of pointed us toward each other, and that's how we kind of started at JD.
Okay. And Theo, Stella, and Peter, who you just heard from are all from Juneau Douglas High School. Now moving over to Thunder Mountain. Michaela, how did you get involved?
I got involved first through social media. That's where I heard about it. It was posted on a lot of different friends' Instagrams and Snapchats. And so that's where I first heard about it, the walkout, that is. But I first heard about the shooting when it happened, and it was heart-wrenching because it wasn't the first nor the second nor the third. It was, I think, maybe the eighth school shooting that has happened in the United States since the beginning of 2018. And it was, I was tired of sitting still. So that's how I really got involved.
Okay, Kathy?
Again, I'm Kathy, and I'm the all student body president at student government. I'm generally politically active. I consider myself an activist and an advocate for students. And so as a school, when we first heard about the event, there was kind of, it was a murmur. It was quiet. It was, hey, everyone, there's another school shooting. And I didn't know what to do about it, but then I had a friend reach out. They sent me a text, and they said, I am absolutely devastated, and I really would like you to do something, because I don't think I can do it myself. And so they reached out to me, and hearing a peer of mine reach out and tell me, could you please do something, because I see you as a leader, could you please do something? I definitely had to step up to the plate and organize something at my school. And so I reached out to Theo, to the Juneau Douglas High School, and like we connected, and they said, we're doing a walkout. And that's really where I began the walkout at Thunder Mountain High School. And so now it's not just a Thunder Mountain High School walkout or a Juneau Douglas High School walkout. It's definitely something we've unified as considered rival schools. We've unified and said, we're walking out together and making our voices be heard.
Okay. Anyone from JD, what's it going to look like on Wednesday for all of you? What are you going to do?
We're going to be busy. We're hoping to get as many bodies out there as possible, just as many people that want to participate. We don't want to force it on anybody, but we do want people to know that we are fighting for their lives and their ability to be safe in school, which is a place that I think really, more than most other places, it needs to be safe. So what we're looking at is we're going to stand up at 10 and walk out of classes, and then we will walk up to the Capitol, past the governor's mansion, and any adults that want to join us will join us at Cope Park and tag on to the end, and we'll make our walk, and then we'll have some speakers, and yeah.
Okay. So that's 10 a.m. this Wednesday is when you'll leave class. You'll walk past the governor's mansion, and just before that, Cope Park, and that's where interested adults can join you in solidarity?
Yeah. Definitely. Okay. We have heard a lot from the community that adults want to get involved, and they want to help us do this, and we really appreciate that outreach, so we are happy to have them follow us up, and we really appreciate the support from the community.
All right. Michaela or Kathy, what's it going to look like for Thunder Mountain students?
At Thunder Mountain High School, we're following more of the national format where there's going to be a walkout at 10 a.m. and then we'll be out for 17 minutes. Well, that 17 minutes for the national walkout is traditionally 17 minutes of silence for the victims of the Parkland shooting. Thunder Mountain is going to be having more of a discussion. We're going to be having speakers. We're going to have an intro and a closing, just kind of like to really talk about empowering students to stand up and make a difference and speak out against the inaction against preventing gun violence. And to reiterate specifically for Thunder Mountain is that this isn't a matter of partisan issue. It isn't a partisan issue. It's about empowering students to stand up and make a difference. And our protest isn't protesting one way or another. It's more protesting the inaction that has been done to prevent gun violence.
Okay. What did you all think when you saw those students from Parkland go to Tallahassee and eventually Washington? What did that mean to you as fellow high school students?
I thought, wow, they're really doing the right thing, because it's time for the youth in our country to really get more politically involved and speak up about the issues they care about, especially when it affects them and their schools and their communities. So I, for one, was very inspired by them.
And that was Stella. Michaela, how did it affect you?
Definitely inspiring is the correct word. When you see a large group of students, it's part of you connects to it when you're a student. It's, I could be one of those people, and that's what we're really trying to do. We're trying to be those people that stand up and speak out for what we believe in and what we're passionate about.
What do you hope, and I don't know if you have sort of a collective position at JD or a collective position at Thunder Mountain, what do you hope is the takeaway from the time you're putting in Wednesday and all the work you're doing organizing this? What's the message that you want to communicate to our listeners?
Throughout our school experience, for as long as I can remember and as long as many of the people that I've talked to can remember, we have been having active shooter drills in our schools that create this atmosphere of terror on a regular basis, knowing that this is a reality for us, that somebody at any moment could come in and with a gun and just end the lives of your peers and your own life. It's disruptive to our education, but more than that, it's disruptive to our mental health, and it's disruptive to our livelihoods. And it is not something that should be seen as normal or okay. That culture of fear needs to end. And this is our way of standing up and saying that we are going to make that change, and we need to see that change happen.
To Thunder Mountain.
And I mentioned this a little bit earlier. So at Thunder Mountain, there was already that stigma going around of saying, oh, look, it's another school shooting. For me, that's really upsetting. And so I think the big takeaway from this is that as students, we have a voice, we have power, and especially power in numbers. And so, again, this is definitely empowering the youth of our nation, the youth of Alaska, and the youth of Juneau, to take a stand and do what's right.
Okay. Peter, will you please remind us how we can participate with the JD movement?
Yeah. If any adults want to leave work and come out, we encourage it because we're doing it. We're leaving our place of work. And so 10 a.m., Cope Park. It'll be a little bit after that that the adults start walking because we have to get there, but probably only 5-7 minutes. But, yeah, it's a great way to show support for your local students and show support for their lives.
And then you'll go past the governor's mansion and get to the Capitol probably 10:30-ish?
We're hoping sooner than that.
Okay.
Because we have some speakers and so we're hoping around 10:20, maybe 10:17, roughly in there. It's hard to gauge with icy sidewalks and all, but.
And I think I saw somewhere that adults are respectfully asked to stand behind the students.
Yeah, this is a student-led march. While we encourage adults to come and participate, we don't want them to overshadow the voices of the future.
Okay, and please remind us what's going to be happening at Thunder Mountain.
And for those in the Valley who can't make it all the way downtown, we'll be having our walkout at 10 a.m. to 10:17 a.m. at the front of Thunder Mountain High School, so community members are welcome to come. I've spoken to several community members who will be present, and so for those out in the Valley that want to make it, that's where we'll be. Out in the front of Thunder Mountain High School.
All right, that's all this Wednesday. That was the voice of Kathy Tran. You also heard from Michaela Goodman, Peter Sidmore, Stella Tallman, and Theo Hauk. I appreciate you all coming on to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Good luck on Wednesday. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. I'll be your host again tomorrow. Alita Buss will be on the show to talk about this month's Mudrooms. Author Nancy Lord will talk about her new book, PH. Steve Kosas will highlight this month's Planetarium presentation. And Yakusuke Dakahiti High School students will highlight an upcoming workshop. Let's take a look at the weather here. The forecast for tonight calls for cloudy skies with patchy fog, lows in the mid-30s and light winds. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, patchy fog, highs around 50. Wednesday calls for a chance of rain with highs in the mid-40s and light winds. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.